Good morning, everyone. Welcome back. I'd like to call this meeting of the Education Finance Division to order, please. Representative Erickson, I look to you as always. Ah! If you need a moment.
Mr. Chair, I'll move approval of the minutes for February 13th.
Thank you very much. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the Erickson motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Aye. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Erickson. Members, I'd like to start with introducing our pages who are here to support us this year. Laura, you want to stand up and say hi? Good morning. How long have you been a page with the House? Third year. Okay. So experienced. Yes. We appreciate your being back. And then Alex, do you want to stand and introduce yourself a little bit? A recent graduate of the University of Minnesota.
Wow.
Right? Yeah, poli sci of all things. So thank you. Welcome. With that, members, we're starting 2 days of, we'll call them oversight hearings. It's a light oversight. It's focused on those entities who were new programs receiving money through the K-12 process last year. I say light because we recognize that we're really only a few months into the new fiscal year and that these programs are getting going, but may not have kind of final results that we might want to look at a later time. But we still wanted to do a check-in on them with how the process was going, how their programs are operating, and see how their experience with the department was as well. So with that, we're going to start with the Pregnant and Parenting Teen Pupil Transportation project that we provided funding for last year. This is obviously a important strategy for making sure that these young women and their babies get off to a strong start in education by helping them complete their high school diplomas and at the same time the babes get some good daycare. So with that, Superintendent, am I saying that correctly?
Kermis.
No, of course I'm not saying it correctly. Thank you, sir. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed. Or Representative Tabke, are we starting with you?
Mr. Chair, we're starting wherever you'd like to start.
You guys arm wrestle. It'd be fun to watch.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you so much.
Representative Tabke.
For having us here today. This Pregnant and Parenting Teen Transportation is a bill that we passed off the House floor last year and then was considered and added to the omnibus bill at the end of session. We really appreciate this being put in there. It's a huge, it's a really, really wonderful thing for our community and our school districts, and hope to expand it in the future. But Mr. Superintendent Kermis is here to talk about the details of it and how the great talents and work that has been done in the state of Minnesota is being used in our district.
Superintendent Kermis, again, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Darren Kermis. I'm the superintendent of Southwest Metro Intermediate School District. We're one of the four intermediate districts in the state of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. One of the handouts you have, just to get a little picture of who we are and what we cover, is a map of our member districts. So we currently have 11 full members and four associates. Bloomington will be an associate beginning July 1st. We extend from our northernmost district of Buffalo, Hanover, Montrose, down through Carver County, so Eastern Carver County, Waconia, Watertown, Mayer, Norwood Young America, the five districts in Scott County, New Prague, Jordan, Belle Plaine, Shakopee, and Park Lake Savage, and then our four southern associates, Waseca, Richland, Heartland, Ellendale, Geneva, Janesville, Waldorf, Pemberton, and Waterville, Elysian, Morristown. So that's the swath that we cover. It does take a bit of time to drive across that territory. Those are the districts that we serve. The program that we want to talk about today, in our district, it's called the New Beginnings Program, and you have a handout as well on this. One of the things that, Mr. Chair, you asked for was some data on the program and then about the bill and the impact. So this, we tried to summarize some of the things that we have. I'll highlight a few things. First of all, Of our pregnant and parenting teens that we serve, 27% are on a special ed IEP or a 504 plan. 49% are students of color. 77% report some form of mental health issue. And 76% are on free and reduced lunch. That gives you a little picture of some of the students that we serve. We also would note that 70% of our students, again, when you think of that geographic area that we cover, 70% of our students need transportation to get to our program. And this program is located physically in Chaska, Minnesota. So with regard to the program itself, one of the things that has been so successful over the years is national research and national data is very clear that of teen girls who become pregnant in high school and have a child, less than 50% graduate even by the time they're 21 and with a regular high school diploma or a GED. The girls in our program graduate at the state average. We roughly put 70 to 80% graduate. Some leave and go back to their district. Some graduate through us. But our program has proven over the years to not only help these young women graduate on time, but we also provide services for their infant and toddler along the way. The last thing I'd say about our program, just to give you an idea of what makes it unique and what you wrote into and passed in the legislation from last year, is a pregnant and parenting teen program, to be effective, I liken it to a three-legged stool. It has to have at least three elements to it. Obviously, it has to have high-quality education. That's what we're here for. So if it doesn't have a quality education component that's going to help these students receive a diploma, what's the point? Second thing it has to have, and that ours has, is high-quality child care. So ours is parent-aware rated. It is top-shelf child care for the girls so that they know that their kids are in good hands and they can stop and visit them between classes and at other points during the day right there on site. And the third element that it needs to have is a prenatal and parenting education opportunities for the young ladies. So we have those programs built into their curriculum throughout the day as well. That's what makes our program good, strong, unique. Over the years, we've served we've had this program in place for over 30 years. We've served over 2,500 students during that time across the southwestern quadrant of the state. And we continue to serve. One piece of data that's good news but also impacts our program a little bit is teen pregnancy rates across the nation, across Minnesota, and in our region are on the decline. And we've got some data on the back of one of the handouts there for you as well, just showing those trends. For us, those numbers, we used to have mid-60s number of students at any one time in our program. Now our numbers have dropped, so we're about 20, still 20 young women who are pregnant and parenting and need services. So that's the program that we have. Why was transportation important, and why did we come the past couple years? And thanks so much, Representative Tabke, for bringing this forward and for all your work to get this through. We were finding that of the students we were serving, there were still many in our community that weren't being served because they couldn't get to us. Technically, New Beginnings is an area learning center. There is no obligation in state law to transport students to an area learning center from outside their district. And so some of our districts would transport if they had an IEP, because then they could get special ed reimbursement. But for the other girls, transportation was not available, which caused two problems. Number one, we had girls that went unserved, who didn't go to school, who often dropped out in our area. Problem number two, and again, I think back to, I hope I have become a better driver now in my 50s than I was in my teens. And I would assume through some of the smiles that many of you would feel the same way. I remember when my daughter was an infant and the first time's in that car seat, my driving tanked. It's not having a new infant in your car, just adds complexity, other things. I certainly was not my best driving. Now take a 16 or 17-year-old who's just learning to drive on, you see our region, mostly rural county roads, in the middle of winter, like today, with an infant or toddler in their car. We, knock on wood, never experienced a tragic automobile accident with our girls coming in that we're driving, but it's just a recipe for disaster. And so providing transportation from the school districts by bus was critically important to both a safe way to get the girls to school and a means to get them there at all. So that's what this bill allows. The question regarding how this, during the summer, we negotiated with and worked with the Department of Education to help identify, you know, part one that they needed to do was make sure that they were properly endorsing those programs that met all three prongs that are listed in the statute. We know at a minimum, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Anoka-Hennepin, I also know Rochester, Intermediate 288 and Intermediate 287. We all of those districts have a program that meets this. I believe there are a couple others across the state that also meet the criteria. But the first thing MDE had to do was to reach out and verify those programs that were eligible. And then the second thing was to create a mechanism so that at the end of the year, they're going to be able to flow transportation aid back to the district who transported pregnant and parenting teens to any of these approved programs. So it's early. It's you know, we haven't seen the money flow yet, but I'm optimistic from some good conversations with department staff that they have identified the proper programs that meet the criteria and that they have a coding mechanism now where the district that's transporting will be able to code the transportation and then receive reimbursement for that. Now, whether that's full reimbursement or prorated is a question that will be seen based on the money that was there and how many dollars are submitted for that. So I hope I have checked off and answered the majority of the questions you had and gave you a little bit of a summary both about our program and how this bill works and why it's important, but I'd certainly be happy to stand for any questions that you have.
Thank you, sir, Superintendent Kermis, and it certainly goes to the focus on equity from this committee. When I hear the was it 50% are students of color, which is disproportionate to the state average, as well as the income, the 76% qualifying for free or reduced price lunch, again, in that case, significantly above the state average. So being intentional and focused on programs that serve those students, as well as being a two-generation approach where we're intervening positively with the mom and with the baby, you can see why this program is a priority for us. Questions for the superintendent? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Superintendent Kermis, is this operational now, and if so, how many buses are being used? Or does each district provide transportation? Will you explain some of that detail for us?
Superintendent Kermis.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson. Yes, in fact, even before the legislation, there were some districts that transported. As I mentioned, if a student was on an IEP, some districts would transport in that case because they could get special ed reimbursement for it. Eastern Carver County Schools, because the program was located within their district boundaries, provided transportation, but that was pretty much the extent of it. This year, we have at least five new girls who are in the program who are being transported who would not have been able to attend in the past. One coming from as far south as La Center, Minnesota, a couple from Shakopee, and a couple from the northern Watertown side that are attending the program with this transportation, which wasn't available before. As far as the buses and vans, it's primarily small vans that come in, and they do come from, it's kind of ends of one across our region. So there are multiple vans or small buses coming in. Oftentimes they will combine, and this was another part that we were really pushing for, a school district, for example, Tri-City United, which is the Montgomery, Lonsdale, La Center area, would have a van or a bus coming up because they would have students coming to our career tech programs or coming to our special ed programs that was already running. And here they're able to put the student on the bus. Now they're gonna still be able to get the full reimbursement for that route. What brought this to our attention originally was the example I used was New Prague School District, had a route with three kids, going to a special ed program. New Prague put two girls who had infants who wanted to come to this program on that route and brought them to Chaska. The buildings are right next door to each other. And when they went through their transportation audit through MDE in that spring, they were expecting 100% reimbursement for that route, and MDE prorated it by the two pregnant parenting teens on there and took the transportation aid away, even though I would submit to you it didn't cost a penny more to have two young women on that same van that was making the same route already. So that's what this really allows, is it allows that wise choice that a district like New Prague had already made to do it and not realize a financial consequence for this without stripping the money away from special ed, because they'll still prorate it 40-60 in my example with New Prague. The 60% will still come from special ed transportation aid, but those other girls on the bus would be able to be reimbursed through this account. So it just allows for efficient running of buses, not doubling up the buses, and yet being able to be reimbursed by the district. So I hope that answered.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that information. That was very beneficial, I think, to our understanding of this program. Will you talk a little bit about the academic instruction? I assume that the girls come and they are there for a full day of school, and they have 4 hours, I believe, of parenting instruction. And then do they come with then the requirements from their home district to the ALC part, or is this a special program that you've created?
Superintendent Kermis.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, let me start from the framework. We have an area learning center, an approved area learning center in Chaska. The girls who are in New Beginnings are enrolled in our area learning center. So that's where they receive their academic instruction, side by side with the other students in our area learning center. As an area learning center, our students in the New Beginnings program or just in the general area learning center have three choices for their diploma. They can receive their diploma from their resident district, they can receive their diploma from Southwest Metro Intermediate District, or they can receive their diploma from the district in which the ALC is located, in this case, Eastern Carver County Schools. Each of those three entities have their, you know, slightly different graduation requirements, so when a student matriculates into us, they elect which diploma they want to receive, and then our guidance counselor works with them and works with the guidance counselor in their neighborhood high school, if they're going that route, to make sure that they are receiving credits in the areas to receive the diploma that they really want. I would say the girls choose mostly either their resident district or Southwest Metro. Very few select an Eastern Carver County diploma because they simply don't have a relationship to it, again, unless they're a resident of Eastern Carver County. But that's the diploma choice that they get. That's the curriculum they receive. The subtle difference for the girls in the New Beginnings program is part of the credit that they earn is in, while they're pregnant, it's prenatal instruction and care. And after they give birth, then it's parenting education and training along those lines. That's part of their day. That's part of the hours you're referring to. So they receive those credits as well towards graduation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from committee members? Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not a question so much. On this past Friday, I had the opportunity to visit Intermediate School District 917 with Superintendent Mark Zuzik, and I just want to acknowledge the challenge that you have with dealing with the differences in the career technical education and the special education and the area learning schools. It was eye-opening to me, I guess, just to see the wide variety of what you deal with on a daily basis, and so I just want to say thank you for doing that.
Thank you. Representative Kreshaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier and the bill author, thank you. Candidly, I wish we weren't talking about this, but that world doesn't exist, and so thank you for stepping up. Two quick things. You give percentages. Is there a place that we could find the actual numbers? I'd be interested in knowing the actual numbers behind this. And the second thing is, and this is a tangent, but maybe it touches it briefly, In this, do you see any involvement or of the fathers, and do you see this helping perhaps build family structures that otherwise might not be there? So I'm just curious if there's some anecdotal or even quantitative evidence there.
Superintendent, I'll throw those questions to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. To the young father's question, yes, in some cases, I would say it's not the majority of cases, but in some cases we do have young fathers who want to be active and want to be involved. And so we do go through a vetting process because, again, our first concern is the safety and well-being of the young woman and the infant. But we also believe that to the extent that the young man wants to be part of that, part of that relationship, part of developing and growing this child, we certainly want to not stand in the way of that. But we do want to make sure we get some students who are pregnant as a result of rape, some students for other reasons, and we do want to make sure that it's a safe environment. But once we've vetted that, yes, we do have some opportunities for the young men to come and participate with the same teachers and to come in and even be part of the same childcare opportunities and some of the parent ed. In an ideal situation, sometimes the young man will also go to our area learning center, so they'll be in the same place at the same time, and they can be receiving educational services there. So, yes, we do that. It's not in every case, and it is vetted first, but, yes, that is something that we try to make sure happens. And that's the second half of your question. I apologize. The first half, again, of your question?
Representative Crescia.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the first half of the question was the numbers, but before I go in there, I just want to thank you for that answer. I don't think we hear that enough, and to know that the answer is not the majority, but it's not zero. And that, so thank you for that. And then the second thing is where we could find the numbers or if that's available.
Superintendent?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative. I believe you have my contact information on these. Sure. Give me a call, send me an email, and I can pull, it's simply a matter of pulling our data by year, so I can give you by year, or by 2 year, or by 5 year, whatever you'd like with that. Outside of that, I'm not sure that there's a state report per se that you'd be able to pull just for this program, because again, the students here are technically reported under our area learning center, so they're not, we can disaggregate it out for you, but it's not necessarily reported in that way at the state level.
Representative Crescia.
Mr. Chair, I would just ask if the committee minister or someone could just email the test fire and just send it out to the committee. That'd be very helpful and appreciate it.
Surely. Thank you. And batting cleanup, Representative Adelson.
Thank you, Chair. I want to thank you for your work. I grew up at an inner city school where I look at the numbers of pregnancies and how they've decreased. I knew several smart, brilliant young women that got pregnant and dropped out of school. They didn't have supportive programs like this. They didn't have opportunities that would help them succeed. So thank you for this work. While we may not want to have these conversations, it's important that we do so that we can make sure that everybody has a good shot. So thank you.
Very good. Representative Tabke, any closing comments on your part?
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I just want to, as well, commend Superintendent Kermes for all the work that he and his school district are doing. It's really great for many of the folks in this room have students who are going and utilizing these services. And this, the pregnant parenting teen piece is really, really important. And when we crafted this bill and put it together, it had been worked on for multiple years, but we had to really ratchet down the ability to access this program due to fiscal note issues and making sure that we had the ability to pay for it. But as we look forward and into the future, if there are other programs that want to utilize this type of transportation, we'll want to revisit this and really look at how this works for other types of programs as well. And so we had, if you remember last year, I know you talked and had a lot of hearings, but the three young women who came before you last year were just absolutely amazing, and it was mostly terrible days to get to the Capitol, like today was when we ended up having our hearings here at the Capitol, and they made it, and they were incredible, and they are doing really well, and it's thanks to everybody's work and Superintendent Kermes's. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Superintendent. And you also are a leading nominee for the best use of color in handouts to the Education Finance Committee for 2020. Beautiful handouts. Love a good map. Thank you, Superintendent. Thank you, Representative. Next up is the Reach Out and Read program. You'll recall last year we got dad jokes from the testifier. I think we're not going to get any of those from Ms. Hoplin. Welcome. Please have a seat. Welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself and remind us of the program and the funding we provided and what that promises.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Chris Hoplin, and I'm the Executive Director of Reach Out and Read Minnesota.
I'm Dr. Karen Elhai. I'm a board chair and a mostly retired pediatrician.
All right. And Representative Katiza Watun, thank you for joining the table.
Thank you. So you should have gotten a handout, and I do have some slides as well to follow along. But yes, this is our first year receiving funding, and we were awarded $75,000 a year for this year and next fiscal year. So I'm here to talk a little bit about what we're doing with that funding and how things are going in our work with MDE. So for those that aren't familiar with our model, I won't read this word for word, but if you Dr. Nate Chomolo testified last year, he was the one with the dad jokes, and he's since moved on. In some ways, he's the new medical director for Medicaid, and so he I don't have any mom jokes, I'm sorry, but but our model works. We work with over 280 clinics around the state. Our clinics are clinics that are doing well child visits starting. Our program starts at the 6-month well child visit usually and goes to 5 years old. And what's happening in our program is that the medical providers at these clinics are trained in the Reach Out and Read model. And so when a child comes in to their well child visit, the provider that might be a medical or might be a pediatrician, it might be a family practice doctor, it could be a nurse practitioner, is bringing in a brand new developmentally appropriate book into that beginning of the well child visit. They're giving it to the family and the child, and they're talking about the importance of reading and talking and singing from birth. So the child does go home with a brand new book at each well child visit, but the core of our program is sort of the trusted relationship that the doctors have with their families over the course of this, you know, years. It ends up being 10 total visits between a child's first visit and their last visit, and then the assumption is then they go to kindergarten. So that's the heart of our program. We do, we have books in many languages, so we're really focused on representing the communities in Minnesota and working with each specific clinic to get them what they need. The evidence, I know this is hard to read, and I won't read it verbatim, but I'm happy to provide this in a document form after. But our program has been around for 31 years, nationally and here in Minnesota for 24, I believe. And we have a lot of evidence to support the program. And so we have a lot of research. We work with doctors. They like research. So we have a lot of research indicating that parents are more likely to read with their children. Children's language scores go up that are in this program. More recent research suggests that children going to a clinic with this program are more likely to adhere to the well child visit schedule, which we know is really important. So there's kind of ongoing research. I guess the biggest thing to note is that we're the only pediatric literacy organization endorsed by the American Academy of Pediatrics. So our reach, so this map that you can't see, you should have gotten a handout where it's a little bit bigger. And on our website, you'd see it even bigger if you wanted to look more closely. But it's basically showing sort of our reach in the different areas of the state, and I'll talk about how our state funding kind of goes along with what we find. We serve over 175,000 children all over the state. We work with close now to 2,000 doctors and nurses at, like I said, I think we're at 282 clinics. But historically, we've been very metro-focused, and so a big part of the funding that we're receiving was to really expand our impact in greater Minnesota, and I'll talk about how we've been doing that. So what do you know, as you heard, we work with clinics. What does Reach on Reed Minnesota as a staff do? We're a small staff. We have been growing. But what our work is really focused on as a as an organization is we go and we visit clinics in person. We meet with the staff and the doctors, and we're very focused on ensuring fidelity to the model. What that means is that we want to make sure we know we have evidence to support our model, but the evidence is only it only works if the model's being implemented. And so what that means for us is the clinic flow in such a way that the doctor has the book readily available to bring in, and are they talking about reading and talking and singing with their families and sort of meeting their families where they're at with that literacy guidance. We also create literacy-rich environments at our clinic. So this picture, small picture, but we just partnered with United Family Medicine, which is right here in St. Paul, to provide funding to enhance their waiting areas to make them more literacy rich, what we say, kid friendly, books available. We want literacy to sort of be embedded throughout the clinic setting. We provide online CME, so that's continuing medical education to our doctors, credits, and of course, like I said, we really work to ensure that every clinic has books that are developmentally appropriate, but culturally relevant, diverse, and in a language that the family speaks in their home. So we work with several national and local vendors to really keep book costs low to between $2.25 and $2.50 a book. So this kind of just highlights Metro versus Greater Minnesota. And like I said, we recognize that there's a disparity in sort of the kids we were serving. So we have, you know, 115,000 here in the 7-county metro, 60,000 in Greater Minnesota that we are currently serving. And we know that, of course, there are less children per county as we venture into more rural Minnesota, but we certainly know that there's an impact we could be making based on sort of county census data. 36% of our children right now, this is self-reporting as low income, being in low income families, and we certainly expect that number to go up. And then 9% self-report reporting speaking a language other than English at home. So when we received the state funding, we of course had to then, you know, submit our proposal to MDE, and we kind of focused on two goals for this fiscal year, which we've started on. So one was we wanted to determine an area of need and hire a program specialist, sort of our first staff person outside of the metro area, and we've done this, and I'll talk more about that in a moment. And then our ongoing goal is to recruit 27 new clinics, and that number 27 was when we wrote the grant, we were at 270 clinics, so it's simply an increase of 10% of our number of clinics. And that could be anywhere in the state, but again, focus on Greater Minnesota. And then one of the ways we would recruit and incentivize clinics to participate is by purchasing their first year of book supply. Our clinics, we do have certain funding to supply sort of ongoing book needs for certain clinics serving certain populations. But generally, when you think about our larger health systems, health partners, you know, CentraCare, et cetera, they feel this program's really important, and they've built the book budget into their operating budget. And so we're simply providing that guidance, but they're buying the books. But so this was an incentive for us to really make an impact in these communities by saying, we're gonna buy that first year of books for you. So the decision-making point came when we learned, you know, in May that we were going to be getting this funding, and we had to decide where we wanted to hire this person, what we call a program specialist. And so I won't belabor it. I'm happy to talk in more detail, but we basically looked at where we already are, and we looked at how many clinics are in each county that we're not already doing Reach Out and Read, so what could the impact potentially be? And we sort of overlaid that with Wilder Foundation's Risk, Reach, and Resilience Report, which I'd encourage you to look at if you're not familiar with. It was a joint project, Wilder, the University of Minnesota. It's on their website, and it basically takes a county-by-county deep dive into risk factors for children in each county. So we kind of could overlay that and say, where can we make the greatest impact? And what we decided is we decided to hire someone in Northwest Minnesota. So we hired a program specialist. I guess a challenge for us with implementing this funding was it took us much longer to sort of hire someone than we anticipated and to sort of get this rolling. And so we didn't find someone and hire someone until mid-October. But we found someone in the Bemidji area. She's lived there for 35 years and is a longtime educator. And she really hit the ground running. So she's been in 13 counties visiting clinics and supporting their programs. And anecdotally, clinics are very, very happy to have someone there in person on the ground and supporting their work. So we've been really excited to be able to do that and to sort of troubleshoot with them about any sort of program quality issues. And then a big part of what that person's doing as well in tandem with our central staff and myself is just outreach and really increasing our visibility, having a seat at the table with the other early childhood folks in Northwest Minnesota, and just kind of really just thinking about partnerships and support for ongoing funding. Recruitment of new clinics is going well. We've actually had a lot of clinics very interested in this program. We always have organic growth with our program. We've grown every year in terms of number of kids served, but we were able to sort of do a little bit more targeted recruitment, and so we're focused on central Minnesota. We're partnering with CentraCare on bringing on a bunch of clinics that they've acquired in rural Minnesota. We've got two in St. Louis and one in Pennington, and we're having a high-level conversation next month with Sanford, who's sort of the big player in Northwest and Southwest Minnesota as well, to talk about the impact that we can make together there. And then finally, just sustainability. I think when we think about next steps for 2000 and our next fiscal year, we hope to hire an additional program specialist again somewhere in a different sort of region of greater Minnesota. But we've been in talks with the initiative foundations around the state to think about partnering, and we really want to make sure that what we're doing is sustainable because we know funding changes, and we really want to be focused on being a part of the community and having those partnerships. So that's all, and I'm happy to take questions.
Thank you, Ms. Hoplin. Questions, representative, please. Sorry.
Mr. Chair, thanks very much. I have a couple of questions. Really, really enjoy hearing about the program, and of course, reading and literacy is terrific. You've been around in Minnesota for 25 years, and I know that the program has been elsewhere in the states longer than that, and you mentioned sustainability. What's your total budget, and who are your benefactors, and how can we strengthen the program and make sure that the services you provide continue?
Ms. Hoplin.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. So our total budget this year without the state funding, where we planned the budget before knowing we were getting money, is close to $300,000. So we've rapidly increased our budget, but we're still, as you can tell, a very small organization. So this is very impactful for us. We historically have been heavily funded by grants, so institutional funding. Foundations all over the state have supported our work, but we've been really focused, I think, in the past, 3 to 5 years, focused on diversifying the funding sources. And so really focusing on foundations, but also individuals, also corporate donations, also working with the health systems to, get their support. So that's where we've been, and I think, again, I think that's going to be the key to our sustainability. We've grown every year. We rarely, I could think of a handful of times where a clinic has started the program and then stopped doing the program. So clinics and providers are incredibly invested in this program, and they don't, once they have it as part of their practice and their families have it, they don't want to lose it. And so we've had much luck with, working with them on finding that sustainable funding as well.
Representative Sandel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one follow-up, and that is access to federal funds. Are there projects in other states which are able to access federal funds? It seems to me the collaboration between literacy and health is so important, and I think that's so great in your organizations. So I wonder if federal grants, either the Department of Health or Education, might be able to help.
Ms. Hoplin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a great question. We actually were started a long time ago. We had federal funding And that went on for many years, and this was before my time. But about 2005, we lost all of our federal funding, and so we sort of had to start from the ground up. And so I certainly, I know our national office, we are a Minnesota 501c3, but we have a national office as well, and they have been working sort of at the federal level on potential. But we haven't received any in many years. But many of the states, it's increasingly so that the states are funding Reach Out and Read through a variety of mechanisms.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Representative Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Hopeland. I had a chance to tour one of the sites that does Reach Out and Read in my area, and it was great to see it in action. In fact, I think we were there. They put the books outside the room waiting for the doctor to come and visit, and one of the ones was it had the toothbrush, and it was the book about brushing your teeth. But I think using that relationship with the doctor to promote literacy is, I think, just goes a long, long way in getting people comfortable with how important it is to read to your kids at night. So thank you.
Any other questions from members? Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify? Representative Katiza Watun, anything you want to share with the committee before we close?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I can just share a brief personal anecdote. My children were beneficiaries of this program before I even knew the specifics about Reach Out and Read, before I was elected to the legislature. And so when I had the opportunity to learn about this program and bring forward the bill in order to support this organization, it was really a truly easy decision for me. So I have three young children. You guys may have seen them at hearings last year. Luckily today was not a snow day. And so I have the perhaps enviable opportunity to bring three children under the age of six to the doctor every time I go to the doctor. And they don't get a book every time. It's just their own appointment. But it's so much fun seeing them. And really, because of that consistency, because we go to the doctor frequently, that they have developed that relationship with our pediatrician, and they're so excited, and they remember exactly what book she gives to them. And they say, like, oh, this one's from Dr. Caitlin, and then of course we just have a big bin of books. So when they choose one of those stories, and my daughter actually went to the same child care provider as our pediatrician's son, so then we saw her outside of the doctor's office as well. Eden Prairie is a smaller town than some people realize, and so it's just funny the way that you can really build that relationship. And when she has the opportunity to see her outside of that context, but also then in her white coat and have those conversations, I think it just is truly so impactful. And then so many families don't have a huge library at home, so when they're able to bring those books home and the kids have something to call their own, and they're able to like flip through the pages, and if they haven't had the instruction at home, the parents don't speak the language necessarily, I think that it goes so far. So I really appreciate all of our support for this program, and thank you for all that you do.
Thank you, Representative Katiza Watun. I noticed you're wearing a white coat today. So, members, again, you can see the emphasis on equity here. The best way to respond to the state's opportunity gaps is to avoid them starting at the earliest weeks of life, and as well as the regional equity issue of this was a well-established program in the metro area, and providing additional funding to make sure that this is more accessible to children and families across the state with your expansion in Greater Minnesota is much appreciated, Ms. Hopland. Ms. Hopland, Dr. Elhai, Representative Katiza Watun, thank you all for being here today.
Thank you.
With that, members, pardon me, Chair Marquardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before we adjourn, I have a student job shadowing me today.
Very good.
He is Cade Carley, came all the way from Hawley.
Ooh.
As part of a program they have, and plans to attend the U of M next year. So he might be in political science, so he might be back a little bit. So Cade Carley here today. So
Cade, thank you. Welcome. You might want to check in with Alex on that U of M poli-sci degree. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I assume you're going to adjourn now, and if there's anyone that has tried to get an appointment with me to discuss their education priorities, on education finance or the school board priorities, I am available now.
The line forms to the right.
In this room.
In this
they
room.
They can wait their turn.
All right. Thank you, Representative Murphy. Representative Krisha, does the line form to the left for you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Murphy, does that include our annual ice cream visit?
Ooh. And why has not the entire committee been invited?
Private company, Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy?
It depends if anybody shows here.
All right. Members, thank you all. We will see you on Wednesday, tomorrow. We are adjourned.